And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Chris finished the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, the Ghost Crew has connected with the other Rebel cells, and a new ally named Ahsoka Tano has emerged. Despite these successes and developments, the fight against the Empire takes a deadly turn as the evil Sith Lord Darth Vader comes to Lothal. There will be... My baby girl explodes! Vader is so scary and he is not dicking around this week, and Ahsoka discovers a terrible truth while the Rebels are on the run. We're talking Siege of Lothal this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
That's good. We were chatting up some Game of Thrones before we started recording.
Yep.
It was awesome when Thanos snapped and killed Superman.
Yep.
That's no all spoilers.
That's all we shall speak of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Did you do anything fun this week?
No, not really. Work. You know,
I started listening to Master and Apprentice, which is a new Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan book, audiobook for it. It's really, really interesting because there's a lot of like wink, wink, nod, nod stuff of what's his butt. Qui-Gon, sorry. I had to think, I was like, well, I just said his name, what's his name? Where it's like things that you know in episode one that are going to happen, but what they're doing is they're talking a lot about prophecies and like how to interpret them and like why someone as pragmatic and like practical as Qui-Gon like believes in prophecies. And it's really, really interesting kind of like getting into that lore a little bit. But the really, really fun part is they have flashbacks when Qui-Gon was a Padawan and Dooku was still in the Jedi Order. And, like, when they do those parts, you're just like, oh, you can see that Dooku was evil from a mile away.
Uh-huh.
like there's another guy who's a Jedi who's kind of, like, a lot like Qui-Gon times 20. Like, super practical. He was brought into the Order, like, really late, so he remembered his family. He drinks and he sleeps around because he's on this long-ass mission for 7 years, and he just kind of, he's like borderline a Jedi, but he was also Dooku's apprentice, too, and so Qui-Gon is like kind of close with him, but they haven't really talked in 7 years, and it's really interesting seeing the two of them together because this guy makes Qui-Gon look like Mace Windu. Like, he's such an extreme Jedi. So, and meanwhile, Obi-Wan's like, but Master, I don't want you to go to the council, and my Master hates me. So it's really fun. I'm enjoying Master and Apprentice. I'm making it sound more silly than it is, but they actually are doing a lot, like, talking about, like, the lore and the prophecy. And they actually gave us our first actual full prophecy of the Chosen One. And I was when I was reading this, I was like, this kind of sounds like, A, you can interpret parts of it in multiple different ways. Like, I was watching Star Wars Explains video for it, and when he was talking about it, I was like, that was not what I thought of when I read that. But there's different things that, to me, it sound like the sequel trilogy, like, setting up for that, as far back as, like, pre-prequels. So, it's been a really interesting read.
Huh. I have nothing to add to that.
That's fine. But that was pretty much my week. Yeah, I just worked, and I hit a drill bit today, and I had a 4-inch drill bit sticking out of my tire.
I saw the picture of that.
Yeah, it sucked. And it happened, like, the very, very nice guys at, like, Mavis Tires was like super nice, because I was like, I have a doctor's appointment in an hour and I really don't want to cancel it because it's really hard to get into. Can you guys like fix this? And because at first they were like, it's going to take 30 to 45 minutes. I was like, but I have this thing in an hour. And they're like, we got you. And I was out of there in 15 minutes. And I was like, thanks, guys. Sorry, people inside that was there before me.
Yep, screw them.
Well, the thing is, I went through the outside first, and then I walked inside, and I saw how busy they were, and I was like, oh, I just jumped ahead three people because I didn't go inside first. I just pulled my broken-ass car up to the outside, and then I walked inside and was like, oh, shit. Sorry, everybody. When things happen to my car, I panic. I don't do well when I panic because then they panic more. So there's a lot of swearing. I talk in my, like, angry, happy voice.
That's why I don't have a car.
I have an angry, happy voice when people are like, well, it looks like you had a flat tire. I'm like, I know! Isn't it great? I have a flat tire! Can you fix it? My angry, happy voice where I like try to sound positive, but I'm so mad and pissed off. I'm just like, this is my I work retail voice. I worked retail for half my life, and I can sound happy at any time, but I'm really fucking gonna kill you. That's my happy, angry retail voice. What'd you think about Siege of Lothal?
Oh, I don't want to say right away. I liked it. I don't want to say how much yet.
Yes or no, did you like it? I know the answer.
I liked it. How could you not like this episode?
This is a good one. You just want to get into it?
Yeah, let's. It's a double-sized.
Oh, that's true. Somehow I broke it down into four acts, and I was prepared for six.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking too, but I guess they gave up a little bit of advertising to double it up.
There was also just a lot of really weird, like, there was like three, because usually I do with the big screen wipe, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's
no, it. There were a few fake out ones, but.
Yeah, they had like one point where they had like three screen wipes in like 2 minutes, and I was just like, I don't know, yeah, it's just the end of the act.
No, yeah, there's a tonal shift to it that you can see anyway, and I think you got it about right.
So, all right, you ready?
I am.
The Siege of Lothal is the 16th and technically 17th episode of Star Wars Rebels, but we're going to ignore the 17th and just save that for next week. And it was released on June 20th, 2015. It was written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Bosco Ng, Brad Rao, and supervising director Dave Filoni. Some extra information for you. Commander Jun Sato is voiced by Keone Young. His other works include True Blood, Sons of Anarchy, Naruto, The Young and the Restless, and Avatar The Last Airbender. Jun Sato's name is derived from the Japanese film director Jun Fukuda and Fukuda. There's no N in the name Fukuda. Jun Fukuda and composer Masaru Sato, and who worked together on the Godzilla series, including Dave Filoni's favorite film, Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. An early version of the script had Sato's name being Fells. James Earl Jones reprises his role from the original trilogy as Darth Vader. Sam Witwer, who is the voice of Darth Maul in The Clone Wars, voices the Emperor in this episode. The scorch mark Sabine gets on her helmet from fighting Vader is what inspires her to repaint her armor and update her look, which we will see starting next week. Some of Phoenix Squadron's A-Wings fighters have a blue stripe and a white triangle to match the Ralph McQuarrie portfolio art he created for the release of Return of the Jedi. Commander Sato's command ship is a repurposed medical frigate from the Clone Wars. The scene with Darth Vader and the Emperor was added after the second draft of the script, based on feedback from Dave Filoni. And in Rebels Recon, they talked about how at this point there was no Rebel Alliance as we know them in Episode 4. There are multiple little groups, some secretive, some militant, but they're not all working together yet. Filoni also said that while Ezra and Kanan's skills and competence are growing with each other, the consequences of killing the Grand Inquisitor, while good at the time, leaves them facing Vader, which they're not ready for. Henry Gilroy talked about how stressful it was to write Vader into the show. Every action and piece of dialogue has weight. They talked how there is how this is Vader in his prime. The good person is buried so deeply in him, and it's not until Luke that he starts to change. They also talk about what a danger Ahsoka is to Vader. She's a tie to his past and who he was as Anakin Skywalker. exposing him as Anakin would undo a lot he did as Vader. Filoni said that she is on his top five list of people who Vader would want to destroy. And finally, and I want to talk about this note for a second, the early outline of this episode had a role for Governor Price, who comes into the series season 3. Up to this point, she is spoken about, but not yet seen. It was Price who was supposed to be sacrificed by Vader in a shuttle explosion, but Minister Tua, and then Minister Tua would have been promoted to governor instead. So I wanted to talk about that set for a second, because if they had gone through with that and they killed Price and, like, Tua stayed and became governor, that would have been a very completely different trajectory for a lot of the show. Because as we'll see when season 3 and season 4 rolls around, Governor Price is a very cold-hearted person, and she will do whatever it is to win. And we know that she's the reason for Kanan's demise in season 4. But I don't think that Tua, and we see it in this episode, like, Tua is not one for brutal tactics, and I don't think she would have it in her. So she would have just straight up been a puppet for Tarkin and Vader. And the series would have been really different in later seasons if Tua hadn't died and she became the governor for the rest of the show.
Oh, I don't think she would have. I don't think she's cut out for it. I think she'd be able to do what she had to do, and she would have been out of there or done. She didn't have what it takes to be an Imperial, really. You know, she rose up to enough to where it became, you know, she's just not the kind of person that's going to cut it as an Imperial, you know. And to the point of where, you know, Vader just knew, like, you know, she's going to betray us, you know. The minute she gets in trouble, she's going to betray us, you know. So
that's why I think I could have saw her as a puppet, and, like, they put in place, like, a more militant minister that just kind of walks on top of her. Yeah, like, what if you have somebody like a Callus as the new minister for her as the governor, and this person, though, like, outranks her military-wise, so, like, all this stuff, and it's just walking on top of Tua. I mean, I would have actually really liked to see something like that, and, like, maybe her try to defect later, or even be, like, a fulcrum-like character of, like, slipping info to the rebels. Like, they could have done a lot with that. Even if, like, as her as a governor, like, her slipping them information when she's now high enough to see, like, the craziness of the upper ranks. Because we've talked about that before. Like, people are cool with the Empire until they get to the upper ranks, and then they either go, I'm still cool, or they go, oh, fuck, this is messed up. Which is what happens with Callus and Tua.
Yeah.
Not Callus, in this episode. He's fully having a great time.
Well, Callus is a lot more savvy than Tula. Tula is just in over her head. She's like, even if she was a puppet, you still need a puppet to do horrible things once in a while.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't be dependable to do that. And, like, even someone like Callus, if, you know, as we know in Callus's future, whatever, if he was going to betray the Empire, he would be able to cover his ass much better. You know, she doesn't have,
which we saw, yeah.
Yeah, she has no guile at all. She was just like, they got their use out of her by, like, using her to draw in the rebels and then doing her in, you know. That way they got her. She was basically a liability to the Empire.
Yeah, I mean, she really was a child of propaganda. Like, she really thought what she was doing was right until she realized it wasn't. And then when she realized she wasn't, it was a danger to them. They had to get rid of her. You know who also likes getting rid of women?
But is very good at.
I had no idea how to transition into that. Hi, Yoda. How are you this week?
Okay.
Did you have a good week?
Oh, all right.
Wow.
And a few Easter eggs.
Oh, yeah. Happy. Well, 3 weeks later, everybody, happy Easter. Well, maybe you need a vacation, which pertains to your question this week. So Paul C. Kelly asked for Yoda, if you were to go on vacation, which planet would you travel to, and what planet would you recommend?
What planet? What planet would Yoda recommend? Where would Yoda like to go? Where should you go? Yoda must think. Oh, Uranus. Uranus Yoda would go to.
Meanwhile, I'm like over here thinking, I'm like, I bet Scarif was nice before the Empire invaded. And then you're like, Uranus.
Too easy a setup it is. That bait Yoda will take.
How is Dagobah as a vacation spot?
Wonderful.
Would you recommend
favorite for the ladies? All ladies must come to Dagobah.
So you would recommend the swamp for like spring break?
Mud baths.
Oh, that's true.
Nature. Good for the skin. Sunlight. Good for the skin.
Dark forest trees.
Yoda will walk on your back. Massage. Work in the mud.
Oh my god, you should open a resort on Dagobah. And a spa.
A spa.
You could call it the Dago Spa. Instead of the Dago Ba, the Dago Spa.
Yay. Your nails get done by Yoda, yes.
Oh, I bet Mama the Hutt would love your Dago Spa.
Mama the Hutt's nails got did.
All right, Yoda, well, thank you. We'll see you next week.
There he goes. He just sort of walks off, too. It's kind of rude.
I know. Never tells a spy. Well, he'll be excited next week, because next week we are guests. So.
Oh, right. And the ladies, too. Oh, jeez.
I know.
I'll keep a bucket of water here, just in case.
And fearful for our guests next week.
I know.
Well, act one.
I'm ready for it.
All right. Here we go. We open the episode, as we do many episodes, with the Gross crew in the middle of a space battle. But this time, they have friends! The Ghost crew is working with Phoenix Squadron as they attack an Imperial freighter. It's a grand old time as they're shooting down TIE fighters and stealing goods and stuff, and everyone's all smiles until more Imperial ships show up to join the party. Commander Sato, the leader of Phoenix Squadron, is nearby in his command ship, which is taking a lot of fire. He calls for a retreat, but Hera wants to get what they came for. They get in range, use magnets to grab the containers, and they call in that they're ready to go. They pick up Sabine and the Phantom and jump into the safety of hyperspace. It's all fun and games! Until we go to the Lothal capital, where my baby girl with you, Minister Tua, and Alexander Kallus are scratching their heads about their little rebel pop problem. Tarkin is pissed because his Star Destroyer got blown up in the season 1 finale. And Tua's like, look, we're doing all the things that all the evil empire things, but like 5 times more evil empire things, and the rebels aren't here. And Kallus sighs and goes, I know, but he's blaming us, so we have to make it like 10 times more evil. And then Kallus pauses and goes, at least we don't have to deal with force jerks like the Grand Inquisitor anymore. And then Vader kicks in the door going, what's up, bitches? Only it's really scary because Vader's actually really scary this week. Tua is rightfully nervous to see him there, and he's calling her out on her lack of creativity. Please read the word creativity as brutality. And he's upset with that creativity in dealing with the rebels. And since the rebels left Lothal, Vader wants to bring them back. And Tua's like, I'm not a military person. I'm just filling in for Governor Price. I don't know how to do these tactics. And Vader is probably smiling at her behind his mask, going, oh, that's no problem. I just so happened to make you a shuttle. That's not going to end terribly for you. And that shuttle will take you to Tarkin, so you can personally talk to him. Vader out. And he strolls out of there. And Kyle strolls out making his best Vader impression and gives his goodbyes to Tua, who is freaking out right now. Back with the rebels, Commander Sato is praising how cool Hera and her crew are. And Ahsoka is there too! Hey Ahsoka, it's me, your girl Hope! I'm happy to have you back! Hi Ahsoka! And suddenly Chopper busts into their meeting with an incoming transmission. And Kanan's like, hey everyone! watch me usurp my chain of command to tell Chopper to play it because I really hate being here. And this doesn't go over well with Space Mom Hera, but they play the message anyway. And it's their bar friend, old Joe, and he has someone who wants to talk to them. And that's my baby girl, Tua, who wants to get off of Lothal in exchange for information. She's clearly scared because she knows that Vader is out for her head now. Ezra and Kanan can sense that Tua is telling the truth, but they don't know it's because of a Sith Lord. And Tua says that she discovered the Empire's true reasons of being on Lothal, as ordered by the Emperor himself. And the adults in the room start discussing this, but it's Ezra who says, "Yo guys, we're doing this!" And Commander Sato gives the okay. So our heroes are going back to Lothal. Meanwhile, Kanan's all pissy about all this happening around him. Can I just say that Ahsoka's just super amused and having a great time with everybody? She's just so happy. Anyway, Kanan stalks out of the room, and Hera catches up. And Space Mom is all frustrated because her space husband is breaking all the protocols. And Kanan is like, "So sue me if I don't know protocols because I was like 13 or something the last time I fought in a war." And Kanan explains that he's grateful that the rebels saved his life, but he doesn't want to get into another war since the last one left him in a pretty bad place in a lot of different ways. And Hera understands all of this and tries to comfort them. And they don't really settle their disagreement, but they're also not mad at each other because they're like the best couple in Star Wars that are actually healthy and functioning, so good for them. And Ezra overhears all of this too. Meanwhile, back in Lothal, Tua is really bad at being sneaky as she's trying to escape the Imperial Dome. But Agent Kallus is on the case, and he sends a probe droid after her. What'd you think of Act 1?
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
I thought there's something in here that people complained about in The Last Jedi wrongly, but they could have complained about rightly in this, is when they release the crates from the Imperial ship, they start falling. They start dropping off it, which would not happen in space.
Yeah. They unless just, the ship was still moving, but yeah, the crates fall.
Yeah. So that's just something I'm like, okay, complain about that in The Last Jedi, but why aren't you complaining about it in this?
Because I bet a lot of those people didn't actually watch Rebels.
I know.
They probably just watched the movies.
So I guess old Joe is a snitch, right? Probably, most likely.
I don't think so. I think he works with the Rebels, but I think
Right, but Minister Tua is able to get him and to get him get them to, you know, if I were old Joe and she was just like, "Hey, can you call up the Rebels?" I'd be like, "What Rebels? What are you talking about?" You know what I mean? So he might
have. That actually makes me wonder, like, how much that they, because, okay, so future seasons, we know that old Joe, something happens to old Joe. They never really state it. We don't know if he's killed or in prison, but the Empire in a future season has taken over his bar. So I'm wondering how much, like, they were keeping an eye on old Joe, so they knew that he was giving them info, but they were just, like, not really following up on that. That's how I took it.
I think they would have had to have had a little relationship with him to, in order to be like, he will get us in touch with the Rebels and for him to go along with doing it. Otherwise he'd be just like, "What do you mean? I don't know how to get a hold of any Rebels."
They just,
so I would be very, if I were the Rebels, I would be very suspicious of old Joe. Seeing as how he was the go between them and the, my only other point on part one is, man, James Earl Jones's voice is right on point in this, way more so than in Rogue One. Rogue One, it was a little funny, you know what I mean? It wasn't quite right. In this, it's like he's enunciating in just the same way he did all through the original trilogy. It sounds exactly like Darth Vader.
I actually have a note about that too, because I don't know if they edited it a little bit differently. But Vader's voice sounds like a touch extra mechanical. Just a touch, like more than like normal. It sounded a little, and it might be because I was listening with headphones, because I had headphones like in my ear, so maybe I could just hear it better. But it sounds like a little bit extra mechanical, which is making it a lot more unnerving, because he doesn't sound like, you know, if I was watching this on like normal speakers or on a TV, it probably wouldn't have caught up. But I think because I was using headphones, like I could hear like the metallicness of his voice. So it made it even more unnerving because he just didn't sound human. It was really good.
He just seemed to do his enunciate. Maybe, you know, when you're voice acting, although that's all he does anyway, but maybe when you're voice acting for a cartoon, he gave it a little more play to it. But whatever it was, it sounded more like Darth Vader than he did in Rogue One, oddly enough.
Yeah.
But that's all I had.
So for my notes, I love this little opening battle. Because it opens just like many other Rebels openings, but this time they have help from Phoenix Squadron, which makes it like different from all the other opening space battles we've had so far.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's nice to get that change up. So this is why I feel bad for Tua. We know that she's not an entirely good person. We saw last season she was doing weapons deals and stuff, but she is a child of the Empire's propaganda machine, and she's not an entirely bad person. Even though she's not an entirely good person either. Because we see in this act that she's trying to humanely get the rebels without hurting the people of Lothal. Like she was saying to Vader, she's like, we're doing curfews, we have more patrols, we're doing all these things. Because she, as the minister of Lothal, she's supposed to be serving the people of Lothal. And so she's trying to do all these things without hurting those people, which is like really admirable for her. But at the same time, it's not good enough for Vader. And like
It's like her job technically, but it's not really, really her job.
I think she's actually from Lothal, though. I feel like I read that somewhere. Like, I think this is her planet. And so that's the thing. Like, Vader wants her to be cruel to like to the people of Lothal, and she's just not doing it, which makes her not Imperial enough, which is like so sad. Because she's trying to be good for her people, but that's not Imperial enough, and we'll see next act that she pays the price for that.
Well, and probably in the course of the big picture, they probably do put people like her in to be, because in the beginning stages, okay, you got some people from the planet on there, but like as they go along and their force grows there, they get rid of those people and put in their own people because like you said, it's hard to get people to kill their own people, you know?
Yeah.
It's easier to bring somebody from outside to do the dirty work.
And I just looked it up. Lothal is her home planet. So, like, those are her people.
Yeah. So, they probably only figured they'd have her in there for a while and then get rid of her, which they did. They used her, basically, from top to bottom.
Yeah. I also, like, every time I watch, like, Vader, like, turn and walk, he would fling his cloak, and I just have a note that says, Vader, are you drama queen?
Oh, yeah.
He's so dramatic. He is always, like,
Anakin Skywalker.
That's
why Tarkin likes him so much.
Anakin Skywalker is such a, drama queen anyway, and then he became Vader and got a cloak, so he's not, like, evil.
Yeah, well, once you give a drama queen a cloak, that's that, you know? You might as well give him a little fan to wave in front of his face and be like, I've got the vapors.
I actually make a note of that when they fight Kanan and Ezra, because that appearance, while good, is like the most Anakin Skywalker appearance ever.
Oh yeah,
It's so much fun having done Clone Wars before Rebels, because like we know what a drama queen Anakin is, and now watching him as Vader, on one hand, like Vader is super duper scary, but like every once in a while he does like these little things, like fling his cloak, and I'm like, that's such an Anakin thing you just did. And it makes it extra fun. So when Tua called, she was saying that she has this information that the Emperor, the real reason that the Emperor wants them to take Lothal. And I started thinking, and I don't think it's ever stated in the show what Tua found. So I started deep diving, trying to find what this information is. And I went down this like little rabbit hole and I found like a bunch of loose ends. Like one random thing is I kept coming across the name Kiro Celsius, but like that name Kiro Celsius doesn't have a page on Wikipedia, Like, so I don't know who this person is, but this person also popped up in a bunch of other different articles, and I have no idea who this person is. But anyway, apparently this Kiro Celsius person gave Tuo this information, but even then it doesn't say what the information is. And long story short, I think the reason why the Emperor is there, from me putting together a bunch of loose ends, is for the Lothal Temple and the World Between Worlds that we see.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
But it's not, that's something that's not going to be, like, common knowledge in the bureaucratic side of the Empire. That's like in Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, Hitler and the Nazis were after the Ark of the Covenant for the mystical side of their, you know, their evil plans. So this would be, you know, this would be something like the Emperor and probably Vader and Tarkin, maybe not even Tarkin specifically. Tarkin might just know they're after some weird Jedi thing, you know, or something. And yeah. Maybe the Inquisitors, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, they're just there to mine whatever, you know, minerals they're getting or whatever.
The Dunium, as we know from the Thrawn novel. But, yeah, it was a really fun, like, 10 minutes of my afternoon, because I was like, what? And then I kept coming across this name, Kiro Celsius, but they don't have a Wikipedia page, so I was, like, writing Star Wars Explained. I was like, who is this person? So it was, like, 10 minutes of my afternoon trying to figure this out, and so I'm pretty sure it's the World Between Worlds that we see later, so. I started thinking of just about how happy Ahsoka must be to be around other Jedi again.
Yeah, and just think, the only thing that would make her even happier is to be around some old clones.
Yeah, and it was just because I was watching her in pretty much every scene, like every time that like Kanan or Ezra did something, she would just smile. Like, she would just have this, like, little, she didn't say anything. She would just smile at them. And I was like, you know that she hasn't probably seen of that, if maybe one Force user, two, if any, she maybe might not have seen any Force user since the Purge. And, you know, she must be just so happy right now.
Yeah.
And my last note is about Kanan Hera's talk in the hallway. And the thing I love about their relationship is they actually talk and communicate, and they don't cut each other down. Like, it could have been, like, if this was any other show, like, Hera could have been like, oh, you're so stupid for doing that and stuff like that, and, like, or Kanan and stuff. But she looks at him and goes, you can't do that. Now talk to me. What's the problem? And they talk. And like, but she lets him communicate his side, and she listens, and she gives her point, and he listens to her point. And even though, like, they don't come to a conclusion, like, that's what makes their relationship, like, so healthy, because they are, like, two healthy adults who both get to talk their side, get it aired out, and you know that they're going to keep on discussing that. And they do it without cutting each other down or being butthurt over it. Like,
I also wonder how much of it has to do with, like, and you would think it would be intuitively the other way, but, like, they're in a situation where they can't bullshit around. And the two of them are two of the most important links in their chain that they have, and they can't and they have a relationship, but they're also part of a team, so they can't be fighting. They have to work things out and be reasonable with each other. And if I was thinking, you know, if they had the luxury of just, like, you know, running a farm and hanging out, they might be they would probably be bickering a lot more. You know, they would probably actually enjoy bickering with each other a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm thinking,
bicker with each other at times.
Huh?
We see them playfully bicker with each other at times.
Right, but if they had, like, no time and no pressure and no mission, they could they could get in full out fights. And I have a feeling part of what is helping to keep them, you know, honest and stuff with each other is the situation they're in. You know, they can't mess around with stupid relationship stuff. And for once, you have characters, usually that's, they write the characters and they'll be, and it's like, why are you guys dicking around with these stupid, petty fights between you when you're in this situation? And in a kid's cartoon, they're writing these characters, you know, more realistically.
Yeah.
And then you don't have these fake little story beats where their bickering somehow leads to messing up something or something like that. You don't, it doesn't become one of those stupid factors in a story that like might affect the plot, but they're really like kind of lazy story things that everybody ever uses. So I appreciate that they have like, and it's good for the kids watching this to see actual adults sorting out their problems in a healthy way too.
Yeah, because like my favorite is that like Hera stops Kanan and she goes, she pretty much gives him the business first. Like, this is what you can and cannot do in that kind of meeting because this is the situation is we're in now. And you see it, like, she's using her mom voice. And then after she gets that off her chest, she softens, she goes, now what's going on? Talk to me. Like, she does the business because it needs to be done, and then she comes at him, like, as a friend or space wife in my case.
It's not written in the usual way where one person is right and one person is wrong and one person wins the argument, you know? They both have good points and they both have valid feelings and stuff, and they just sort of meet and discuss them enough to be able to continue on, you know, instead of, like, each one of them trying to win their argument or something, you know?
Yeah. So, but that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
I did not.
Okay.
Or so, I do act, not.
Act 2?
Let's do it.
All right. Act 2. The Spectres pile into a shuttle because they can't use the Ghost on this mission. And Ezra briefs them on the plan that they will steal to a shuttle that is taking her to Tarkin. But everyone's kind of on the fence about this one, mostly because Tua, you know, tried to kill them a few times in season one. But Ezra's like, well, I'm the protagonist, guys, so I'll say something about how we'll help people and stuff. And they arrive on Lothal, and Ezra suddenly feels something really weird and cold waiting for them on the surface. They get to the hangar on the ground and split up with Zeb and Chopper waiting with their escape shuttle if they need it. Everything is tense, because there's less people around, more stormtroopers, and Star Destroyers everywhere above. And Kanan makes a plan, telling Hera, Sabine, and Ezra to get ready to drop in onto his hangar from above while he goes to, quote-unquote, make a few friends. And they watch as Kanan take out a stormtrooper and pulls a Broadway theater amount of time quick change into that armor. Like, for real.
You ever seen anybody putting on their it's a like a 2-hour process for cosplayers to put on their stormtrooper outfits?
Yeah, I know. We had like people of the 501st do like a couple free comic book days at our comic book store. It takes a long time, and Kanan does it like the what I
said. It's like an Iron Man suit or something.
Yeah. And, like, it was, like, a Broadway quick change, because, like, I used to help with quick changes to get, like, an actor in one full costume into another in about 7 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And Kanan stripped that trooper and put on his armor in about 3 seconds. And any costume director in any theater house would hire Kanan instantly.
Yep.
It's
that's
crazy.
That's what my roommate's been doing for a job lately.
Yeah, like, it's... That was crazy far too fast, but it's also a kid's show. So, anyway... Everyone moves into position as Tua arrives, and she's not alone. Tua is like, you know, Agent Kallus, this was super duper nice of you to drive me here, but you really didn't have to drive me here because I'm not being suspicious or anything. And Agent Kallus is like, well, Lord Vader wanted me to make sure you got on his very, very special ship for you. And Tua's like, thanks, Agent Kallus. And Sabine springs the attack, and Stormtrooper Kanan shuts the door, locking Kallus and Tua inside with him. And it's a shootout, and Ezra tells Tua to get into the shuttle. And then, my baby girl, with the U, G-U-R-L, Minister Tua, gets on the shuttle, and she blows up! She blows up on the shuttle, guys! And look, I lost Grande in the last episode, and I lost Tua this week, and Rebels needs to stop taking all my Imperials I love so much, because I love very few Imperials, guys. I'm not really an Imperial person.
Well, you know, you're getting used to your Game of Thrones, where you can, if you love any characters, they could die. But like, you keep loving the bad guys. So what are you gonna do? You know, that's what happens. That's what bad guys do. They croak out at some point.
I know. Oh, and Rebel, stop. And then Kallus is like, "Woe is me, the death of Minister Tua at the hands of the rebels." And then he turns and he's like, "Hey, probe droid, make sure you're recording all of this, because I'm voiced by David Oyelowo, and my voice actor has won an Oscar, and I'm really hamming this in right now. Woe is me! I'm sad over Tua's death." And Kanan, Hera, and Ezra have to make a run for it, and Sabine calls Zeb, who swoops in and picks them all up in their little shuttle. And Kallus watches, just with a big old evil smile on his face. Meanwhile, Vader is also watching from above, and he's probably having a great time right about now, because he just blew up a woman, and it's fine. And just as our heroes are flying away, a walker shoots down their shuttle, and they crash land and are forced to run away on foot. Kallus calls into Vader like, "Sir, you must know how nice it is to work with people who actually have plans that work, and I'm so happy to be here." And Vader's like, "No need to thank me, because I already know how awesome I am. Now, spin more lies and propaganda so the populace knows that the rebels murdered the minister and locked down all the spaceports. Anything that tries to leave, blow it up." And our heroes regroup at Ezra's old house, where they listen to the holonet. And Kallus' probe droid got plenty of pictures of the Spectres after they quote-unquote killed Tua. And Hera says they have to leave Lothal now for good, but Ezra doesn't want to leave. But they really don't have a choice at this point anymore. And suddenly, stormtroopers find their hideout, and Chopper quickly seals the door. But the troopers blast their way in and drop some grenades down in the secret bunker. And everything explodes, and it's on fire! But our heroes manage to escape to the roof before they got blown up. Like, Tua, I'm not over it! And they need to get off the planet. So Kanan makes a plan for them to go to the Imperial Complex to get a shuttle, since no one would expect them to go there. And as they leave, Ezra looks one last time down at his childhood home burning and leaves the past behind. What'd you think of Act 2?
It was good. It's just sort of like moving forward in the story a little bit, so there wasn't a lot like for me to know. I only had one note on this, really. And that was, it was really neat to see a Jedi in a stormtrooper unit, in a stormtrooper outfit, doing like Jedi stuff. I don't know if we've ever seen that before.
What?
Well, okay, so when they were having the shootout, and Kanan's in his stormtrooper outfit, and they start shooting at him, you know, they figure out he's not with them. He's doing Jedi flips, and you know, usually you see stormtroopers just sort of stumbling around and shooting, and here he is doing flips and dodging, you know,
blaster beams and stuff. I see what you're saying, because I was about to say, I was like, Luke's worn the stormtrooper outfit before, but I see what you're saying.
Luke didn't know what the hell he was doing when he was in that stormtrooper outfit.
Yeah, doing actual Jedi stuff. I see what you're saying.
Luke was just as awkward as all the other stormtroopers in this. This was like somebody who knew what they were doing in a stormtrooper outfit, so it was pretty cool. And, you know, I mean, you saw clones doing all sorts of great clone hardcore training stuff, but it's not like a Jedi, you know, so it was, yeah. It was neat. But that's all I really had for that part. The action in this episode is really well done. You know, they put a lot of time into all the action shots, and it's just beautiful to look at, but not a lot to note. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what I'm here for. I got the character stuff. Part of the reason I missed your note, because I realized one of my notes is, I wrote it before, because like I write my notes as the episode goes along, and I realized one of my notes wasn't valid, because I was like, oh, wait, I saw that part. Okay, so I realized one of my notes didn't work anymore. When they are arriving on Lothal, Ezra feels Vader's presence before they even get to the planet, which I liked because it showed how much he's grown. But I noticed Kanan's example, like, response when Ezra talked to him about it, because at first I was like, huh, I guess Kanan didn't notice it. But then when I saw his response of like, like, you know, Kanan felt it too, but he wasn't going to say anything about it.
I don't know. I would have at least given Ezra a heads up of it, or at least like
I don't think he knew what it was either, because he's never felt a Sith Lord.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, like, he doesn't know what a Vader or a Palpatine feels like. Because, like, it's not even until, I think, the next act where he's like, oh my god, that was a Sith Lord. Ezra, we're never fighting that ever again. Oh my god. And Ezra's like, I don't comprehend any of this. So, like, I think Kanan probably felt it too, and he wasn't going to say anything. And then Ezra said something, so he's just like, huh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's because Kanan knows what a Sith Lord means, you know.
Yeah.
He had at least a little bit of training where they scared him with Sith history and in Sith history class.
He probably doesn't know what it feels like, so he's probably not even sure what it is yet. He probably just feels a thing.
In Sith history class.
History class. There's a lot of these shots throughout the entire episode, but I just love every shot of Star Destroyers over Lothal City. Uh-huh. They're just all really pretty.
Star Destroyers just look good in general, but when you start having two or three of them float around, they start looking really cool. You know
but
what I mean?
But it's not even just that. Like, you have, like, the blue sky with the stars and, like, the lights from the city, and they're, like, illuminating the Star Destroyers. There was one that was, like, on sunset, so all the Star Destroyers were silhouetted. Like, pretty much every shot of Star Destroyers above the city were just really pretty in this episode. Every single one. And everyone was, like, slightly different. So... In big letters, I have written, Rebels needs to stop killing all my favorite bad guys. Just in big letters. So, Talos is cold towards Tua, all of this. And it's, like, another reason why it's really sometimes tough to believe at times that later on he leaves and becomes a rebel. And it just makes me wish we got, like, a little bit more time in that time period, like, when he's turning. Because, like, I started thinking about it, and I feel like Arisco and Grint, when they got executed and beheaded by the Grand Inquisitor, like, that was the start of, I think, Kallus's turn. Because a big thing with Kallus is loyalty. He's very loyal to the Empire, and he knew that Arisco and Grint were also loyal to the Empire. But they still got killed, and I feel like that was a moment of him of, like, oh my god, the Empire will kill people who are loyal to him. But Tua is loyal, too, and I think the difference is, like, she's trying to defect. Like, it all comes down to loyalty. Like, I think he had a problem with Arisco and Grint because they were loyal and they got killed. But he knows now that Tua used to be loyal, but now she's turning traitor. And so I think that's where he doesn't have a problem with it. So I think he had a problem with Arisco and Grint being killed because they were very loyal Imperials. But now Tua's the enemy. And I think
he more than doesn't have a problem with it. He's sort of evilly grinning because he's taken her to her doom and that she's scared. He's like, he's got that sort of like sneer on his face because he knows when she's just like, oh, you don't have to take me. And he's like, oh, no, my pleasure. And like, you know, he knows where he's taking her.
Yeah. And I think the difference is that like now she's the enemy. And I think him as a soldier can rationalize that. Well, where I don't think he was able to rationalize Grint and Arisco being killed by the Grand Inquisitor and beheaded, because to him, like, they didn't do anything that was, like, they weren't defecting. They were still Imperials, just like him and Tarkin, and, like, they were all Imperials and they were killed. Tua is now the enemy, and I think that's why it's so easy for him to be so cold to her in this episode.
I'm not sure he was that big of a fan of her in the first place anyway, you know what I mean?
I think she annoyed him a little bit. If we're being honest here, she screamed at him for Empire Day, and I don't think he ever got over it.
Yeah.
Like, Grand Inquisitor, she's screaming at me, and it wasn't my fault. And Grand Inquisitor was like, I know, she screamed at me too. She's such a little woman, but she's so loud. Yeah, I don't think Tua was his favorite person, but I think it was still just one of those things that, like, she was now the enemy, which makes him easier to be cold towards. And, My only other note is about Ezra, because, like, when Hera says, like, we need to leave Lothal, he's like, no, we can't leave Lothal, we have to stay here. Like, that's a very good, visceral response from him, because Lothal is his home. These are his people, and he can see that they're in pain. And this is also everything he's ever known. Like, yeah, he's gone on a few space adventures with the Spectres and stuff like that, but they always come home to Lothal. Like, that's his base camp. And so it makes it understandable that he's like, nervous and scared to leave, which they keep writing him very well in this episode in that respect. And we'll see that once they leave starting this episode, that will be Ezra's primary goal for the rest of the show to get back to the Lothal. And I like how they're writing him, because they're writing him in a way that really makes sense.
Yeah, no, Ezra is also becoming more mature, you know. He's learned to stop and think things through, you know, by necessity.
And the Empire's making it really easy, too. Like, I love that shot of him, like, standing and, like, watching his home burn, because it was, I was playing, like, My Chemical Romance in the back of my head, like, singing Ghost of You in the background, like, he can never going home, never going home. And I was just, like, singing in the background of my head as I was watching that scene. But yeah, I mean, they're writing Ezra very well, so that was my point. But that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 3.
All right, this is the good part. This is the Vader part. I'm ready for the good part. Act 3. At the Imperial Complex, Kanan is still in his Stormtrooper getup, and Ezra is now dressed as a cadet, and they mosey up to the door pushing two boxes on a crate. Or on a hovercraft. Ezra tries to Jedi mind trick a trooper, but it fails. So Kanan swaggers up, showing him how it's done, and mind tricks the guy, and they get in. They push the crates with all their friends inside to a closet where they put away their disguises and sneak out to the hangar where there's a shuttle waiting for them. But they get sidetracked when they see some shield generators they've been looking for. So they all stop and grab some of those as well. But just as they're making a break for it, Kanan and Ezra both stop. And they sense something really bad and turn around. And there's Darth Vader standing in the doorway, his smoke machine going, his theme song playing in the background, and he's ready to fuck them up. And a fight breaks out with Hera and Zeb and Sabine with some stormtroopers. But they are all eyes are on Vader versus Kanan and Ezra, who really don't stand a chance. And Vader's just toying with them. If we're being really honest here, this fight could last about 10 seconds, but Vader's just fucking around with Ezra and Kanan at this point. And during all of this, Sabine and Zeb toss a couple of grenades and blow up a walker. Kanan and Ezra shove Vader under it, and the walker falls on top of the Darth Lord. The Dark Lord is what I meant to say. And just as they think they won, the walker moves, and Darth Vader slowly lifts the fiery rubble off of him like an evil godman. And Kanan and Ezra are like, nope! And they make a run for it. And Sabine gives them cover fire, but Vader blocks the shot right back into her helmet. And everyone barely gets on the shuttle and get away on time. And Vader chooses not to go after them quite yet. On the shuttle, everyone is very much freaking out about what just happened. And Kanan says it wasn't an Inquisitor, but something worse, a Sith Lord. Ezra, who is scared, wants to know how to fight it. And Kanan's like, are you crazy? We're hopefully never getting close to that thing again. And they really can't fight their way through the blockade off the planet. So, Hera cooks up a plan to help smuggle them off-world. Back at the Imperial Complex, Kallus comes to Vader's office, which I think used to be Tua's office, so that's a bit dark. And Kallus says that the rebels are hiding. And Vader nods and tells him to burn down Tarkin Town, a little refugee holdout, to make sure that the rebels come out of hiding. Back with our heroes, they call in an IOU to Mr. Lando Calrissian, who is happy to see Hera, and Kanan shuts down all flirting with his space wife. They haggle with Lando, who wants the shield generators they just picked up at the hangar, and since they're desperate, Kanan agrees to give him 3. Lando's not on the planet at the moment, so they'll go meet his droid on a farm. And the droid greets them and is all like, howdy y'all, I'm a droid! And because he has a little country accent, he's adorable. And as they're getting ready to, blah, blah, blah. And as they're going to get everything set up for their smuggle heist, Ezra sees smoke off in the distance. He takes one of Lando's speeder bikes and heads that way, and Kanan lets him go. It's Tarkin Town burning. Kanan joins Ezra, who is pissed off that the Empire would do this to their own people and take them prisoner. Kanan said that it's because of them, the fight with the rebels and the Empire. Everything they do now has a cost. Ezra wants to fight, but Kanan realizes Ezra doesn't actually understand what he's saying. He's not afraid, but honestly, Ezra doesn't know what he's getting himself into. End of Act 3.
All right, I think I got my most notes for this act. Of course.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I don't have a lot on the Darth Vader part, except this is one of the great Darth Vader moments of all time. Like, this is like a nice warm-up for the Rogue One scene where you see Darth Vader in true, like...
I have almost that exact same note!
But, yeah, he's just sort of feeling out their power. He's just sort of feeling what kind of power they have, you know? He doesn't really want to crush them at first. He's just sort of like, ooh, other Force users, what's going on here? Oh, I can crush them, and, like... is just sort of seeing what they would do, you know, testing it out.
It's almost kind of slow. Like, it's actually a little bit slow in the beginning, because it's really like, Kanan lunges, and Vader grabs him, and then, like, you know in that moment, Vader could, like, cut him in half, but he's like,
right.
No, I'll just throw him into a bucket.
he wants to see what he's facing, you know? Yeah. They're both feeling each other out, so it seems a little slow now watching it, but I think that's post Rogue One, where Vader like tore his way through the blockade runner.
And if we're being honest here, like I think at this point in the timeline, the Inquisitors have pretty much hunted a lot of the Jedi. So I'm sure like they haven't had a Jedi in a while, and Vader's like, I gotta find a Jedi. Oh man, I'm gonna make this last.
He's gonna enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah, he's gonna have fun with it.
And you know this wasn't
because
as
Anakin
oh shit
Skywalker
as
Skywalker is a drama queen.
and the first time I saw this was a lot more intense because it was like oh it's Darth Vader's back, but you know so it seemed a lot more like intense than the second time I was watching it, but it's pretty insane. It's pretty much just up to. Until Rogue One, this was like the scariest, most threatening Darth Vader moment in all of Star Wars, you know, in all of visual Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I thought that was awesome.
Since we pretty much have the same note, I'm going to go ahead and say mine with you, okay?
Okay.
So I agree, like, since this did come out before Rogue One, and so this is the most brutal, like the one, the iconic shot is A, him standing in the doorway and his lightsaber just lights up, and then him lifting the walker off of himself, and you have, like, all the fire and the flames behind him. Like, that is the most badass image of Vader ever. But then I started realizing, like, this entire episode is the best Vader, too, because he's, like, killing Tua and, like, burning Tarkin Town. Like, he is being... like the most evil version of Vader that I think we've ever seen, because
he's
I don't
doing
even
his
think
job.
He's
this is just Vader doing his workaday job, which is
yeah. I don't even think
evil.
He's this evil in the original trilogy. Like he is murdering people. He is burning refugee camps. He is lifting walkers off of himself. Like this
he's evil in the original trilogy. We just don't see it. That's him. We're seeing him chasing after Luke Skywalker. This is what this is just his 9-to-5 job is going and terrorizing everybody, you know?
Yeah, and it's so interesting because, like, until Rogue One came out, like, this episode was the most evil Vader I think we've ever had on screen until Rogue One.
Yep.
But that's continue with your notes, though. I wanted to add that just because... between killing Tua and burning a refugee camp and, like, all this entire fight scene, like, this is the best Vader in Soul Rogue One.
just a couple small notes. I love the way the searchlights look on the Star Destroyers, which is funny, as if they'd be using searchlights from a Star Destroyer to serve, but it still looked visually really neat. And when they're breaking in and they open up the box and Chopper's like, hey, let me out. Chopper's got rockets on the bottom of his feet. What's going on with that?
I actually have a note about that scene, too.
Oh, really? I was just like, come on, dude. You could pop right out of there in a second if you want. You're just being a little baby. I just love the idea of like, hey, I just love the term Lando's farm. Hey, let's go down to Lando's farm. Lando's droid... Doesn't Lando's droid basically sound like he has the exact same like mixture of speech impediment accent as Zero the Hutt? He doesn't have as high a pitch voice as Zero the Hutt, but he has the same accent as him.
A little country accent.
it's kind of, well, like, I mean, in our terms, it's kind of like a Louisiana, like, Southern gentleman accent. So maybe he's from, like, I don't think that's a HUD accent. It's probably where from someplace Zero lived for a long time or something. So maybe that droid's from there, too.
I actually had to look it up.
But he has basically the same speech patterns as Zero the HUD.
So I was wondering about this droid, so I looked it up. Because when I was listening to him talking, I was like, who's voicing him? He's actually voiced by Sam Witwer, who voices Maul and the Emperor in this episode. But that is, I found this, I thought you would like this. That is an RQ protocol droid, and it's named after Ralph McQuarrie.
That makes sense. It looks very Ralph McQuarrie.
It is. All the protocol droids are based off his version, early versions of C-3PO.
Of 3PO, yeah.
So I thought you would like that. That is an RQ protocol droid named after Mr. McQuarrie himself.
But that's all the notes I got.
Well, for me, I talked about this a lot about Ahsoka during the Clone Wars. But in the scene where Ezra fails to mind trick the stormtrooper, I like that they do stuff like that because it's really important to show that Ezra is still learning and he does fail at times. Because I think if they just always showed him constantly succeeding, Ezra would seem very overpowered. And they did that constantly. Like, there's one particular episode with Ahsoka and Rio Chuchi where Ahsoka mind tricks the guard and she gets by, but she forgets to mind trick it for Rio too. And she had to go back and redo it again. So I like when they do this stuff with the Padawans to show that they're not perfect. They're still learning, and I think it's important to show that they're still making mistakes and still learning, so they're not just always overpowered at all times.
And it also sort of hints that the mind trick might be one of the trickier Jedi things to learn.
Yeah.
Because you're messing with somebody else's mind.
He just leans on the guy, and he's just like, let me show you how it's done. You will let us pass. There's like a distinct change in his voice. So about your note with Chopper, I had a note in that scene of, why did they take off all their disguises? Why didn't they just stay in the cadet and the stormtrooper outfit and just push them all the way to the shuttle?
Yeah.
I guess it's so they can, like, fight each other and, like, look cool in their original costumes when they fight Vader. But there's no, like, logically no reason why they just didn't stay as the stormtrooper and the cadet outfit and just push them to the shuttle.
And use the extra armor anyway, you know?
Yeah. I thought that, too. I was just like, That entire scene was just like, oh, we have to put them back in their original costumes. So we talked last season a lot about Kanan's progress and how he got better and better with his lightsaber fighting to the point where he could kill the Grand Inquisitor. And then we get him fighting Vader, and he looks so bad. But what I really liked about that is it shows how powerful Vader is. Because we just watched all last season Kanan improve, and he took out this big bad, and it was awesome. And now he's against Vader, and he looks like how he did in Rise of the Old Masters when he fought the Grand Inquisitor for the first time, where he just kind of floundered through that fight, and he's floundering through this fight. And I liked how it, on one hand, it showed that Kanan's improved, yeah, but Vader's just that powerful.
Oh, so, yeah, by... you know, a geometric amount, you know, and a lot of experience.
Yeah. Also, one of my favorite lines of, like, the entire series, like, not just this episode, like, the entire series, is Ezra going, if that doesn't kill him, what will? And Kanan going, not us.
Yeah, definitely not them.
I laugh every time I hear that line of, not us, let's go. Like, that's one of my favorite lines in all of Rebels. I love that line. Oh, so I want to own up to something. So I was wrong / forgot about something that we talked about in the last season. When we were covering Idiot's Array, I had said that I didn't think Lando showed up again in the series. And they never got that IOU from him, which you were saying, like, no, I swear he showed up again. You kept saying that.
I was right. Yeah,
you were. I thought
during the show, and I forgot to write it down. I can't believe I did not take that opportunity to gloat, but I'll take it now. Yeah, I was right.
I'll admit when I was wrong, because I just forgot. I totally forgot he was in this episode. And so when he popped up, I was like, oh, Chris is going to tell me how he was right. Let me write this down. So yeah, when we did Idiot's Array, I just flat out forgot that Lando was in this episode. I really did. And I should have looked it up. Like, that's the thing. Like, I should have looked it up for the and saw that, but I forgot. So the burning of Tarkin Town reminded me a little bit of the episode Innocence of Ryloth from Clone Wars, where it had the little Twilight girl Numa, and she meets up with the clones Waxer and Boyle, and they like protect her for the episode. It's like it's a very early season one episode. And so one of the things that I love so much about that episode is it showed the horrors of war through the eyes of Numa, who just got caught in the middle of this conflict. And we're seeing it again here with the burning of Tarkin Town. And I think that's something that the Filoniverse does really well as a whole, is showing just the normal, regular people getting caught up in this fight. Because,
except this time, I think they purposely showed it at a distance. You notice that? It was at a distance, and it didn't. They were smart enough to know that, like, it was a trick to draw him out, you know? Because Vader's like, burn it, it'll draw him out. And it didn't draw him out. You know, they saw it and they were just like, yeah, we're pissed about it. And they made a point to say they took all the people in. They didn't burn all the people there. It might have been a different story.
Yeah.
But you could tell they were like, yeah, that. And Kanan said, everything we do from now on is going to have consequences, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's something that the Filoniverse as a whole does really well, is just showing like the horrors of war from the point of view of like the regular people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, like, we saw it all throughout Clone Wars. We're seeing it here in Rebels. And, like, they're kind of doing that with Resistance, because the whole show takes place on a gas station. So every person there, outside of Kaz and Yeager, pretty much, are regular, normal people. And they each get affected in different ways from this fight between the First Order and the Resistance, which we see in, like, with a lot of the characters. Like, they make different choices based on this fight. And I think that's what I like about Resistance so much, is it is the blue collar show. It is about the blue collared people who are not fighters. They're not rebels. They're not First Order people. They're just regular people living on a gas station. And that's what I think is one of the best takes on that show. And so it's just something as a whole that the Filoniverse does really, really well. And my final note is just like the little talk between Ezra and Kanan after they look at Tarkin Town. Because, like, Ezra's like, oh, we're going to fight and we're going to win. And Kanan keeps trying to tell him, like, you don't understand what you're saying, kid. Like, you don't understand what war is. Like, you don't know. Like, you're scaring me because you don't know. And it's I started thinking that up to this point, Ezra has kind of only really known the fun side of being a rebel. Like, yeah, they've had some scares with the Grand Inquisitor and they almost died on Mustafar and stuff like that.
And he's known some people who've died and stuff like that. But yeah. Not, like, but the crushing horror of it, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, he only knows all this from the winning side. And, like, that's what I find really interesting, because, like, Kanan knows the true horrors of war. Like, he's seen it. He's lost people. He lost the Jedi Order as a Padawan at Ezra's age. And,
yeah,
like,
no, Kanan saw everything, the whole order of things taken down, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's, like, what he's really trying to get Ezra to understand, because, like, he was Ezra's age when that happened. So, and, like, Ezra just hasn't seen it yet. And I like that scene, because, like, that is what Kanan is trying to tell him. But Ezra's just not getting it. And he knows that when Ezra gets it, it's going to be really bad for him. So he's trying to space dad him. And I love that. So, but that's all I have for Act 3. You want to wrap this puppy up?
Let's finish this off.
Yeah. excuse me. That was a really, really weak burp. I can do better. Okay, that was a little bit better. Act 4! So, they head back to Lando's farm and let everyone know that Tarkin Town is gone. And it's for real this time. They have to leave Lothal. Luckily, Lando had some transponders laying around. Sabine matched them with the code of their stolen shuttle, so they'll load them all up on the ship and head out. And one by one, putting some space in between them, the rebels push the transponders out in the air, making a trail of them, so it looks like there's multiple ships. Up in space, the Star Destroyers start picking up signals. Admiral Constantine sends out fighters, but with all the multiple transponders, the TIE starts splitting up, and it's time for Hera to act. The Empire starts shooting down the transponders is a really hard word to say multiple times in a row. Transponder! The Empire starts shooting down transponders until they only have the shuttle left. But it's too late, and our heroes jump to the safety of hyperspace. Now that they're safe, the team powwows for a meeting. They can't go back to Lothal, and they hash out what to do next. Kanan doesn't want to fight in the Rebellion, because he doesn't want to go through another war. Sabine wants to get the ghost and lay low. Zeb likes fighting in the Rebellion because it reminds him of when he used to fight with the Honor Guard with his people. Ezra wants to help Lothal, but they can't do that now. But Ezra thinks that the Rebels could help Lothal in the future, so he wants to stay too. And Hera wants to fight with the Rebellion. With Kanan outvoted, they choose to stay with the Rebel fleet. But the baddies! With Constantine, back with the baddies, Constantine tells Kallus and Vader that the Rebels got away. And Vader leaves to go after them. And Kallus says that there's a tracking device on the Rebel shuttle. Bum, bum, bum. Our heroes arrive back with the rest of the Phoenix Squadron. They dock with the big home ship, and Chopper runs out saying that there's a transmitter that just suddenly turned on. And they book it to the command center to warn everybody. And just then, a lone TIE comes out of hyperspace. And it's Vader, and he's not there to dick around this time. And all the stupid Rebels are like, well, it's just one guy. We can take on one guy, because they don't know any better. And then they all start dying left and right. And everyone's like, oh, maybe we should do something about this. So Hera gathers up her crew and heads for the ghost. And Ahsoka decides to tag along and gets on board the ghost with them. The kids check in on the ghost guns, and Hera actually calls her and Kanan mom and dad, and my heart melts for the space family. And Vader does another pass, trying to take out the shields of the Phoenix Squadron's main ship as the ghost moves out into the fight. And Ahsoka realizes that there's something up with this one fighter, and gets Kanan to focus with her. They concentrate to see how strong the force this guy really is. And Ezra feels it too, and he realizes it's the same Sith Lord they felt on Lothal. And then Vader and Ahsoka connect, and they know each other are there. The Padawan lives, and Ahsoka senses her old master before passing out into Kanan's arms. And Vader breaks off his attack, because this Ahsoka knowledge is suddenly real important. And Sato says that they're all doing a really good job, and Kanan's like, oh my god, shut up and get out of there now! And then more Imperial ships arrive. They have no choice but to abandon Phoenix Squadron's command ship. Vader tells the Star Destroyers to hold their fire and just block them because he really wants Ahsoka alive. And Sato finally gives in and abandons his ship. And Hera puts a Hera plan into place and makes a run for the Star Destroyer to buy them more time. But Vader is on their tail. Sato and the fleet get away and will meet up with them later. And Hera pushes it for the Star Destroyers, flying in between them. And just before they can get her in the tractor beam, Hera jumps to hyperspace. And the tractor beam captures Vader instead. And Admiral Constantine is like, welp, time to throw my entire crew under the bus. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, I'm evil. Later, once they're back with the Rebel fleet, Kanan and Ezra check in on Ahsoka, who is awake, and now she's really thinking hard about her life. They powwow about the Sith Lord and how it's different from the Inquisitors from before. It reminds the adults of the Clone Wars and the fear and the hate from back then. Ahsoka is probably lying because she says that she doesn't know who Vader is. And Kanan and Ezra says that they're a team now, and a space family, and it'll all be okay, like the end of an episode of My Little Pony. And Ahsoka's like, oh, that's really cute. And then she goes back to thinking really hard about her life. And finally, back with the bad guys, Vader kicks Constantine and Kallus off the bridge, and calls into Papa Palpatine. And Papa Palps is like, oh good, Vader, are you having a lovely time on Lothal? And Vader is like, dude, Ahsoka lives! It's not like the hashtag, she's actually here and alive! And Palpatine is like, dude, that's awesome! I'll send more Inquisitors, and you go and get her! Season 2 looks pretty bitchin'! The end. Ah. I love doing my Palpatine voice. What'd you think of the final act?
Well, this is a good episode for evil anyway, so you might as well enjoy it.
Oh my god, I like halfway through that I was like, I don't know how to read anymore, apparently.
I was good to see Papa Palpy again. They didn't show him. I don't know why. I didn't know why they wouldn't want to show the Rebels design for Palpatine, but whatever. That's okay. It was adding to the evil ambiance of the show, so I'm not going to complain. All I know is, like, there was one point where, like, Zeb was like, I enjoy fighting with Phoenix Squadron. And then they're like, Vader comes out of hyperspace. They're like, deploy Phoenix Squadron. I'm like, well, goodbye, Phoenix Squadron. So much for enjoying the company of Phoenix Squadron. For the most part. I have a, I'll do my two shot. Well, they're all kind of shallow, but there's one good fake swear in here where he says, get the fleet out of here, which always makes it, that always tricks you when somebody says get the, and then an F word after it. And, another, this is another, sucked into space, blown into space. This is something that's very Star Wars, and where there's basically sort of like this is all the way back to episode one, where, you know, they're like, we got to run the blockade of ships, but there are all these ships in one place. Like that. They're like, pull all the Star Destroyers and cut them off. And it's like, so they pull the Star Destroyers there. And it's like, all right, why don't you go into hyperspace down? Just turn 90 degrees and go zoom. You know, in order to cut somebody off in space like that, you have to like completely encircle them, I would think, you know. So that's a really good point.
I never thought about that before.
And they're always just like, and I mean, if you're going to a specific place, but then again, the Imperials don't know where they would be going to in hyperspace. In what direction or anything, and at that point, it probably doesn't matter to them. They should just go.
I think Phoenix Squadron actually goes the other direction, and Hera goes for the blockade.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like if they're all the ships are there, go in the opposite direction, go down, go up, go 45 degrees. There's a million.
I know Hera was buying the skate pods time, and I know that's why she was going after the Star Destroyers to like buy their
fighters. Well, that and it also looked really cool.
Yeah, but I think that's part of, like, I know she was buying them time, but yeah, like, the moment they're gone, like, go down in hyperspace, like, pew!
And, my only other note is it's really great to hear James Earl Jones say the word name Kenobi when Darth Vader says, well, maybe Kenobi, and the Emperor's like, oh, man, maybe if he's alive, you know? Probably knowing full well that he's alive because he's the Emperor, but... It's just great hearing James Earl Jones say Kenobi. Yeah, it's awesome. I know I'm doing it to Emperor like voice, but yeah, that's all I got for part four.
You know who also has?
Sorry. I'm just the Yoda popping up whenever you say you know who else.
You know who else has a really good Vader voice, because he actually voiced Vader in several of the video games? Scott Lawrence, who is the voice of Yeager in Resistance.
Oh, okay, I could hear that. He's got a real deep edge to his voice. You know, he's got a like deep undertone to his voice.
When they did the Resistance panel at Celebration, he actually did his Vader impression. And even without like the mechanical sound on top, he sounds like Vader. Like, it was creepy. Like, he's just on stage doing a Vader impression, and the entire cast of Resistance was like, whoa!
There's a video going around of Mark Hamill doing his Harrison Ford impression.
And I thought he did that.
Dead on. Dead on.
Mark Hamill is a gem. So for my notes, this is actually, I think, my only, like, kind of my only big note, because it has several parts. Something I like about Kanan is he doesn't want to fight another war, and he's being very honest about that and very open. But he also knows that he gets outvoted. And what I like about him, especially as a leader, is he's not going to like it, but he'll stick around and fight with the Rebellion because that's where his team is. And I like that about him, is that he's sticking with his team even if he's not liking it. And sometimes you have to do that. You have to compromise. And he's going to be
vocal. Well, he's not a prima donna. That's one thing that Jedi's try to train out of you anyway, you know?
Yeah. And I also like that scene with Zeb, too, because... like, Zeb's character makes sense in that, because Zeb used to be a soldier. You know, he used to be part of a bigger force with the Lasat Honor Guard. And so, like, I like that that's what he likes about the Rebellion, is because he gets to fight with soldiers again, and that's very in character for him. And then I just started thinking about that scene as a whole. And that's just a really good scene in general, with them talking about their future and their voting on it. because we really don't get that many scenes like that in a show like this, where the heroes actually sit and have time to talk and process and, like, make those decisions. Like, we see those sometimes, but not always in kids' shows, like, because a lot of times they're like, well, we're going to do what's right. Yeah! But they actually sit and talk about that, and I forgot that actually Sabine was like, guys, let's go into hiding. I forgot that Sabine had that vote. So it was just a really nice scene all around with them, like, talking about what they actually want to do. Because I have a feeling if Hera had been outvoted, I almost would like to see what would happen then. Because if the entire crew didn't want to fight in the rebellion, I would actually kind of wonder what Hera would do. Because they have been kind of helping the rebellion, but not really a part of it. And I think that, so there's a lot of ways that scene could have gone. And so it was just written very well for everybody got to voice their opinions. Ezra is the right one because he's like, we can't help Lothal now, but let's join the rebels and we can help Lothal later, which is actually what happens. So it was just, the entire scene is just like really well written because we don't always get show like those kind of scenes in kids shows where they actually stop and talk and vote and like discuss. So yeah, it was really well done. I like the fight between Vader and Phoenix Squadron because it again, like my note in Act 2, that this is the best Vader because we got to see him fight on the ground, we got to see him be brutal, we got to see his tactics, and now we get to see him in the sky. And Anakin Skywalker is an ace pilot, and that is his forte. He is a one-man wrecking crew.
That's why I was like, bye-bye, Squadron.
And then I started kind of thinking about Ahsoka because on one time, like, this is our second episode with Ahsoka, and just so you guys know, we've already recorded next week because we have guests next week and we've already recorded next week for Last Commanders. So this was actually a note that you brought up, Chris, which made me think about this. So next week we'll talk about a little bit more about how like Ahsoka hasn't really done anything. And that like next week will be her third episode. This is her second episode. And she hasn't really done much since she's been back. And so like on one hand, oh, that's kind of a bummer because I love Ahsoka and I'm happy that she's back, but she hasn't really done much. But then I started thinking about like what Dave Filoni was saying when they brought her back in last week in Fire Across the Galaxy. And he made a point of saying, we did not want this to be Clone Wars 2.0. Like, this show is about the Spectres. Like, this is their show. And so it also makes kind of sense because it'd be very easy to bring back Ahsoka and for this to suddenly be the Ahsoka show and for them to, like, really cash in that fan side. So I'm actually really glad that, like, while she hasn't done a lot, I'm really glad they haven't gone that direction either, where it's just suddenly the Ahsoka show and it's not about the Spectres anymore. And I really like that they've done that. And to be honest, she's a rebel leader and they're a little cell. Like, she has other things to do and like they can go do their own thing and the show is about them. So like, I think it's really well done that they're giving us just enough Ahsoka doing Ahsoka things without it becoming like all about her. So like, I do like that about it.
Yeah, I just thought they used her more in the beginning, but like, you know, by the time the show all pans out, they use her perfectly without overshadowing the regular characters.
Yeah. But I also think that Ahsoka lied. I think in that moment she knew and felt Vader and knew it was Anakin right there. But I think a lot of it is that she doesn't want to believe it's him. Because in the Ahsoka novel, Ahsoka talks about like how she's meditating and she's feeling out in the Force and that she doesn't feel Anakin alive anymore. And she assumes that Anakin is dead. But we know that Vader is like a completely different person from Anakin. And so Vader probably feels very different from the Force and Anakin. And also in the Ahsoka novel, like she was half a galaxy away. So she wasn't even close. But like being physically this close to Anakin, I think she for sure knew that that was Anakin. And I think a lot of it is her in denial, and because I don't think she wants to believe it, and B, I think she needs proof to like confirm it in her mind. She's like, of her going like, I felt Anakin, but that's not right. I need to figure out why that felt like Anakin. So I think she actually kind of lied to Kanan and Ezra a little bit, that she, when she said she didn't know who the Sith Lord was, I think she did.
Well, she Obi-Wan Kenobi lied.
Yeah,
I don't know. And, you know, and with Sith, and when Jedi seem to run into Sith, they seem to refer to them as it. You know, what was that thing, you know?
Yeah.
What was that? You know, it was that they don't think of them as being, you know, like an organic being almost. They just look at them as almost like an evil demon or whatever, a thing. So, you know, So she was trying to compile whether, and the thing, you know, the thing that used to be Anakin. And if I were her, I probably wouldn't want to talk to about it with
these two people Ezra that you've known
right
for a day.
That moment either, you know?
Yeah.
I'd probably want to process a little bit before I started telling that story.
Because in all honesty, she's known the Spectres, like, what, like, probably a few days, if that?
Right, right.
Maybe a few days. So. I forgot how stubborn Commander Sato was in this episode, and he, like, almost got a lot of his crew killed because he was not willing to leave that ship. I forgot about that. He was just like, no, it's fine, everything's on fire, but we're going to keep fighting, and everybody was like, get off the ship, Sato! He was like, fine, I guess I'll leave my ship. And I was like, Commander Sato, you're being very silly right now. Okay. Well, my next note is...
Sorry.
I was leaving it open if you wanted to say anything. So.
Really.
Oh, Constantine. Throwing your dude under the bus when he tractor beams Vader. Oh, you're so cold, man. I laugh.
That's the makings of a good Imperial officer.
Yes, he did.
A live Imperial officer.
Yeah. I'm also starting to think, so in the scene where Vader comes in to call Palpatine and he kicks Constantine and Callus out of the room, there's actually a moment where Callus is leaving and he, like, glares over his shoulder and, like, gives the stank eye to Vader before the doors close. And I started thinking, like, why show us that? Like, why show us Callus doing that? And I wonder, I don't know if Callus really likes Force users in general. Because we know in season one, like, he had to put up with Grande, and that him and Grande had, like, conflicting plans, and, like, they weren't getting along. And now there's this Vader guy who's fucking up, like, who's invading his life, and, like...
Yeah, he's pushing him around on his own territory. He'd rather have him... He's kicking him out of his own turf, so he'd rather...
And his enemies are, like, Force users, too. So I'm starting to think that Callus just really doesn't like Force users in general.
Yeah, no, and that's... And I think, generally, he probably has hurt probably everybody but the Emperor and Tarkin. They're pretty much like Vader's not looking to make friends. He'd rather be hated and feared than, you know, so it gives him full license to just be a prick all of the time to everybody.
Yeah. And one thing it wasn't for this episode. It was Fire Across the Galaxy. The Rebels Recon for that. They had mentioned that they, like, made a point to always film Vader from below, so you're always looking up at him. And they said that the only person that looks down on him is the Emperor. And so I was really looking for those shots. So I'm glad that they did it, that the only time we actually look down on Vader is, like, when we're in the Emperor's point of view. And I just thought that was a really cool shot, that the only time we're looking down on him is when it's the Emperor. So I just thought that was a really cool shot, because I was looking for those ever since I heard that in the Rebels Recon. And my last note is, I love that Vader wants to super use Ahsoka to find Obi-Wan. Because for one, I don't know if Ahsoka actually knows where Obi-Wan is, but I do think that Vader wants to knock out Obi-Wan more than Ahsoka, because Obi-Wan helped him become Vader, which he hates. And then there's Ahsoka, who is very useful to him, but Ahsoka also probably has the closest chance, other than Luke, who he doesn't know about, to actually turn him back to Anakin, and I think that scares Vader. Like, I don't think Vader ever wants to be Anakin anymore, and I think he knows how dangerous Ahsoka is to Vader, because she is the only person that Vader knows of right now that could possibly turn him back to Anakin, which is something he doesn't want. And I think he's worried about that, and Ahsoka is the most dangerous person in the galaxy to Vader now.
Yeah, they didn't end their relationship like he and Obi-Wan did.
Yeah, they ended it on good terms, and I think it'd be interesting if, like, what would have happened if he got her, and to think about, because, like, we know that they fight later on in season two and stuff like that, and he's wanting to kill her, but I think, like, I think if Vader knew, if he sat down long enough with Ahsoka, that she could possibly get through to him, and I don't think he wants to even deal with that.
Yeah.
But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
I don't. You ready for me to score it up? Are you ready?
I am. Score it up, Chris.
I'm giving this, for the first time ever, in all of our coverage a 10 out of 10.
Oh my god, really? This is your first... Guys, you don't understand. Like, he didn't have a 10 for 10 in all of Clone Wars. He had to retroactively go back and do a 10 for 10 after looking at the series up as a whole. But he never scored one. A 10
plus
for 10.
Plus I know oh my all god. The episodes after this, and I know all the episodes of the new Star Wars show. So... Like,
oh
yeah,
my God.
I have to say this is my favorite animated Star Wars show episode of all time so far.
Well,
yeah,
I thought
this was a perfect episode insofar it was a great Star Wars action episode. You know, it had exciting things going with a lot of heft to it, and the way they reintroduced Vader was... They didn't do it as a novelty, as a walk-on, or a just sort of stupid thing. They really did it up, and they got to, and they showed him doing his thing, and the things he was doing all were had a lot to do with the story. And then when you throw Ahsoka into the mix, then you start getting resonances. Basically, there's resonances to Clone Wars, to all the other Star Wars movies in this, without them being just like referential.
Yeah.
And the way it ties together is like basically the whole history of the beginning of Clone Wars. This is like the one episode that brings it all together. Now there are some crazy episodes of Rebels coming up, but we'll be discussing why I probably give those like a 9.5 or a 9.99 or something, but this is probably my favorite animated episode of a Star Wars show of any of them.
I'm so interested now to see what you think when we get to Twilight of the Apprentice, because the only reason I didn't score this a 10 for 10 is because
you're leaving Twilight room for that.
Yeah, I wanted to have room for Twilight of the Apprentice because I knew going into Rebels that is my 10 for 10. That's my 10 for 10 of the entire series. That's my favorite episode of the entire series. And
well, I'm saying it might be a 9.99 for me, but, like, this one gets the points because it's the reintroduction, you know?
Yeah.
This one sets the stage for that one, and at the same time, it, like, brings back a lot of resonance of the stuff of the past, so I think it just gets this extra little push for me.
See, everything you just said is how I feel about Twilight the Apprentice, because I'm now very interested to see how you score that, and if I'm wondering if you're gonna have 2 10 for 10s.
We'll see, but I don't think so. I don't think there's I'll have to see it again, but there's elements of that make it slightly less.
The helicopter inquisitors.
Well, yeah, but there's goofy stuff in this one too, like the boxes falling and stuff like that. Whatever on all that. But I mean, it was also in the context of this was Disney bringing Darth Vader back.
Yeah.
This was the return of Darth Vader. Like, everybody's sort of thinking Rogue One is just the movie going fans, but this was where it really happened.
Yeah.
You know, besides the comics, but in filmed stuff. And not only was it done well, it's like, you know, this is a more badass Darth Vader than he was in all of the movies.
Yeah.
Even like Empire Strikes Back, he's just way more powerful, you know, threatening. And they brought back a character that we've had humanized for us through the prequels and Clone Wars, and then said, oh yeah, you know, there, you know, and when you see him, you're like thinking, oh right, you're thinking very strongly, there's Anakin, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he just starts tearing things up and you're like, oh wait, no, that's right.
Yeah,
Anakin is gone.
They did say in Rebels Recon, like, this is Vader in his prime.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very key thing to say, because in the original trilogy, that's Vader at the end of his life. But, like, this is, like, key Vader at, the peak of his evilness. So, but for me, like, this is an amazing episode from beginning to end. Like, Vader is the scariest he's been ever been until Rogue One. And they're even brutal to, like, their own, like, Tua. Like, they murder Tua. And that's
yeah.
insane.
Oh, yeah, zero mercy. Zero.
Yeah. And the Rebels don't win here. And Ezra is starting to see the firsthand the horrors of war, and he's not quite getting it, which is scary for him. And they have to, and, like, there's an entire shift in the series. They have to leave Lothal. So far, the entire show has been on Lothal for the most part, and now we're, it shifts the show to go into newer things. So it's a story shift as well. So it's all done really well, and we even get a little bit of Lando. And so I gave it a 9.75 out of 10, because
You're giving yourself some leeway.
Oh, I know. Twilight of the Apprentice is my 10 for 10 of this show, of the series. Like, there's nothing around it. It's my 10 for 10. This is everything you said about this episode is how I feel about Twilight. So just know, you guys, when we get to the season finale, it's a 10 for 10 for Hope. So, Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering Hey, Lando, Idiot's Array. Ha ha!
I like how you say Lando. It reminds me of, like, let's give it to Mikey. Let's get Mikey to try it. Hey, Mikey.
Hey, Lando. All right, eat this thing.
So the first one's from Aaron Henley. And he says, don't startle the puffer pig. Though if it balloons out, do you get more bacon from it? You know what? I don't think so. I think he just fills with air or gas.
Yeah, mass doesn't, you know, mass is mass.
A good episode. Kind of creepy, though, how Lando kept hitting on the 15-year-old. Well, Lando. I know that's just his natural charisma, but Lando, dude, she's a Mandalorian. Try anything and you're lucky to be just have a broken arm.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, in this episode, too, we were messing with Dario. I forgot how, because it's been a while since I listened to the episode, but I think we were talking about, like, how he was just starting to... And then we started yelling.
And then we started yelling, yep.
So, this was in response to that.
And I realized I don't have anybody I'm doing voices with, so I'm going to do a cheesy Cheech voice for Dario, since his last name is Gonzalez. I'll go totally Cheech when I do his voice. So this is my Dario Gonzalez voice from here on.
Man.
Dario Gonzalez says, I usually start to listen to the show when I'm cooking dinner, and I pause it here and there. And yes, I do listen to it at night. I'm just about falling asleep, and you two freaked me the fuck out.
Man.
Well... glad to be of service. That was, that's what you get for telling us that you listen to it while we're going to sleep. And we know, like, nobody's going to get an hour and a half into the show laying in bed with no matter how much I try to listen to late night radio shows and stuff when they're talking about cool stuff. I get like 5 minutes into it laying in bed listening to it before I'm snoring out, no matter how interesting it is. So, yeah, we know right now we're talking to the sleeping, unconscious psyche of Dario Gonzalez.
You will send Hope more candy.
Hey, pendejo. All right, last one from Aaron Henley. Considering the podcast you do with Chris, that is saying something. Is that a response to Dario?
It is.
The podcast that Dario does with me, which is Eat It and Beat It.
Speaking of eating it, candy.
Yeah,
I feel it's been
finally
so long,
we're back back on the candy.
Yeah, because like we had the season one wrap up, the celebration episode, my Thrawn episode that we did at 221 BeatCon, and then we recorded with our guests before this one for next week, and we didn't do candy in that one, so we haven't done candy in so long. There's actually like a little bit of dust on my candy.
what do you want to do?
The first thing I picked up was a Chocapic, which is kind of like a brown package with a dog on it. The first thing I picked up.
All right. Let me
Chocapic
see.
Dog on it.
Oh,
look.
I found it. Yeah.
Well, if you don't know what
we're
doing.
They look like moose antlers at first, but they're just big floppy dog ears.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's a weirdo. And so our friend Dario, who we just talked about in a Cheech voice, Since it's candy from all over the world to review. So the Choco Pig is from Portugal.
Ugh. Oh, Hope, it looks like Cocoa Crispy. Not, are they Cocoa? What am I thinking of? The
Cocoa Crispies.
The Cocoa Crispies with like a milky frosting layer under them, like Cocoa Crispies glopped together.
They taste like Cocoa Krispies with a chocolate layer on the bottom.
Yep.
That's exactly what they taste like.
It's good. It's not as sweet as I thought it was going to be.
I know. I was just thinking that too. I bit into it. I'm like, that's not sweet at all.
No.
Mmm.
Very good.
That's delicious. Thank you, Dario. We love you. Well, that's all I have for this episode. You have anything else?
It's got sort of that texture, like that stuffed gorp, you know, when they sort of make granola and then glop it all together.
Oh, yeah. Mmm, that's really good, though, because I like that it's not so sweet. Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else, Chris?
I do not.
Well, where can people find you?
You can find me. Chomp, nom, nom, nom. At twotruefreaks.com. That is our website. That's where we post all our web shows, often known as podcasts, for those who haven't heard of them, even though you're listening to one right now. And you can go there, you can see what all the shows we have there in our archives and all the new shows coming up. You can sign up for our RSS feed there, or you can also sign up for it on iTunes, where we'd love for you to leave comments. And you can go to Facebook, where we have the Two True Freaks Facebook page, which also will show you all the stuff that we're putting up. Multiple shows per week. You're probably going to get a new show almost every day. And that we also have the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is sort of like just a forum for hanging out and talking. You know, just like hanging out with everybody and like shooting the shit. And we also have on one of the most powerful venues of all, Twitter, run by one of the most powerful podcasters of all, Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene. A little clappies in there.
The power of Gene. Unlimited Gene power.
Unlimited Gene. Dun, 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 dun. Gene. I love my Palpatine voice. Holy shit, Vader, Ahsoka's back.
He's got an extra little bit of nasal that you give him that makes him just sound nastier and pointier.
Ah, thank you.
But that's where you can find me. What about Hope? Where can they find you, evil Palpatine Hope?
You can find me at JGuys and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. And I'm also a fanfic writer on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short, where I write a Thrawn fanfiction called Forces of Gravity, and I beta read my best friend's fanfic, Valkyrie Strike. I'm also working on a little side project called The Lucky Leku, which is about Agent Callus infiltrating a pop band. Think of the Backstreet Boys, but one of them is a rebel spy. And he has to figure out which one's a rebel spy. And yeah, and I write like a bunch of like little fan fiction. So you can find all that on Archive of Our Own, and my name on there is Chaos Lydia. So, oh my gosh, we have guests next week, Chris! Oh,
yeah, I wonder if they're going to be cool or not. Oh, yeah, we already know because we recorded it weeks ago. They're awesomely cool.
Guys, I'm so excited for you to hear next week's episode. It's so much fun.
Yeah, we can, you know, I think there's another episode where we're talking about having them on and we're like, oh, well, you know, it'll be fun. But now we actually have recorded with them, even though it doesn't seem like we have. But we have it, you know, and it's a great show.
It is. We have John Marie and Maria from Geeky Bubble, and they are a mother-daughter duo, and we have so much fun, and they have great insight and they're just we had the best time recording with them. So
yeah, they were fun and easy guests, and yeah, and I'm sure we will be hearing more of from them in the future.
Yeah, so I can't wait for you guys to hear it. So until next week, enjoy and have so much fun next week, guys. I can't wait for you guys to hear it because it was just, I just can't wait. So yay! Okay, bye.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.